Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger. Spices, new topics every single week, and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we are fresh off of UFC Mexico City. Turns out it wasn't UFC Mexico, it was Mexico City, so my bad on that. Last time out, we were calling it UFC Mexico, but I guess it's classified as Mexico City since it took place in Mexico City. But yes, it went down. Decent cardio, not the best of the year, not the worst. We did go 10-2. On predictions, though, so we are absolutely amazing, 88-45 on the year, 88 correct, 45 incorrect for predictions. We are doing absolutely phenomenal this year, one of the best to date, I believe, as we wrapped up our final event in March. But on today's episode, we will be recapping all the action from UFC Mexico City and talking about what's next for some of the fighters. As well, we will be looking at the March Madness update. That's right, we have updates on March Madness, as we now know the final four teams that will be heading to the Final Four, if you want to phrase it like that. But yes, it is all one seed, so not the most exciting stuff. I mean, it just shows the level of talent that has been in this year's March Madness with how little upsets there have been. I did actually win my competition I was in on Friday. I had a fantastic weekend, was able to celebrate, go out with the girlfriend, head out to the bar, watch some fun movies, watch some sports. It was a good time, and now it's Sunday. We're winding down, and the week's about to get going again. So, without ado, let's get right on into it with our first up of our two things we'll be discussing, and that is March Madness. All right, March Madness. This hasn't been a bad March Madness. I just think it's been more of March with basketball and less madness. There hasn't been too much madness. So, of course, on Thursday, we did have our first few games. We already discussed that Alabama and Florida had won. Alabama manhandled BYU 113-88, and Florida beat Maryland 87-71. But the two games we didn't talk about were Duke and Arizona and Texas Tech and Arkansas. Now, those two are much more closer than the other ones. However, after being up 6 at halftime, Duke was able to maintain that the entire second half, winning 100-93. And you honestly had Caleb Love dropping 35 in his final career basketball game in college for the Wildcats, but just too little, too late. You just can't do anything with Cooper Flags dropping 30. Whatever Ken Knupple's name is, 20 points from him as well. Sion James dropping 16, Tyrese Proctor being a role player as always, and Duke shooting the lights out, 61% from the field, 57.9% from three. Absolutely phenomenal work from them, and they out-rebounded them by 6 boards. So Duke beating Arizona, not a shocker really there, but everyone's kind of hoping Caleb Love would be the one person to take down this Duke team, and he almost was, but too little, too late. The other game we had on Thursday was Arkansas and Texas Tech, and Arkansas was up 10 with just around 7 minutes left in the game. Lo and behold, Texas Tech is able to bring it to overtime, and they win with just 2 points. Amazing work from Janelle Davis for Arkansas, dropping 30, Carter Knox dropping 20, but Texas Tech, baby, Darren Williams 20, JT Toppin 20, and Christian Harrison 22. JT Toppin actually played on the Texas Tech team that I watched in 2019 make it to the Final Four. If that doesn't tell you how weird, actually, I think he was on that team, if I'm not mistaken. I think he's been in the college basketball a while. I don't know for sure now that I've actually thought about it. 2019 would have been 6 years ago, but hey, college basketball works pretty weird. Those games, kind of decent. 2 blowouts and 2 close ones. We get into Friday. Michigan State, Ole Miss. I thought Ole Miss was going to do it. I really thought Ole Miss was going to do it, but Michigan State, 73-70, pulls it together right at the end, including a 20 bomb from Jace Richardson. Yeah, good work for the number 2 seed in Michigan State Spartans. Getting past Ole Miss, and I'm happy. You know, I didn't think Ole Miss would make it that far. I had them going out in round 1 to UNC, much the less making it to the Sweet 16. Props to them, but yeah, you're a football school. You're not a basketball school, Ole Miss. Michigan State, they are kind of a basketball school. On the other hand, a game we thought would be close, Tennessee and Kentucky, turned out to just be Tennessee in the lead the entire game. They were up 9 at halftime, and they ended up winning by 16. Yeah, good stuff for Tennessee. They were able to advance to the Elite 8 in that game. But, I mean, Kentucky, good stuff. They had a decent run. I mean, compared to last year where you guys got bounced in round 1, wasn't it, to, who was it, Oakland. That's right, Oakland with that one shooter, that 3-point shooter. Can't remember his name. Jack Gelke or something? Jack Gokey or something? I don't know. He was an absolute dog. Anyways, Kentucky getting bounced out of here by Tennessee. Tennessee's always the team that makes it to the Elite Eight. I feel like that's always a recurring thing. Tennessee's always in at least the Elite Eight, or maybe even the Sweet 16, if you want to say that. Michigan, Auburn, not even close there, 78-65. Auburn manhandles them with ease. Yeah, Michigan, not much to offer. I thought if there was anyone that was going to upset Auburn, it was going to be Michigan. Nothing there. Now, the closest we've seen a one seed to getting upset, got to be here. Houston, Purdue. Houston wins by 2 in an absolutely close matchup. But Purdue was up 2 at halftime. Okay, so it took Houston had to fight. Houston had to fight. I mean, Milos Uzan, 22 points. Emmanuel Sharp, 17. They did hold LJ Cryer to only 5 points on 36 minutes played. As for Purdue, Fletcher Lawyer dropping 16. Trey Kaufman-Wren dropping 14. But when it came down to it, Houston's a one seed. They have just so many guys with experience, and they were able to get past them and advance to the Elite Eight. So all your one seeds advancing, along with a couple twos and even a three. But that was just the beginning. As we got into the weekend, and we actually got into Saturday, and the Elite Eight officially began. And we kick things off with, of course, Texas Tech and Florida. And Texas Tech had it close the whole game, but these Florida Gators, they're good. They're freaking good. And there's a moment getting down there at the end, and it really looked like Texas Tech was going to win. They were up 8. There was like 4 minutes left. And then I blinked, 2 minutes left, and the Gators are up 4. That's just how it happens. Walter Clayton Jr. having a career game, 30 points. Thomas Howe dropping 20. Elijah Miller dropping 10. It was a phenomenal performance for Florida. Actually, Elijah Martin, sorry about that. Just great work. Great work from Florida. For Texas Tech, JT Toppin, Darren Williams, they got both 20 pieces. And man, this Florida team, they're good. They are the number 2 favorite since the beginning. They still are the number 2 favorite to win March Madness. They're a good team, and they'll be in the Final Four. Who will be on the other side of the bracket? Well, Duke, if you're open, if you saw Duke almost lose to Arizona, okay, you saw Arizona give them a run for the money, Duke pulled away at the end, you may have thought, okay, Alabama, they're also going to give them a challenge. How about absolutely not? 85-65, the Blue Devils truly may be the best one seed we've ever seen. Grant Nelson, 10.7 rebounds. Mark Sears held to 6.6 assists. This team was locked down. Cooper Flagg, 16. Tyrese Proctor, 17. Colin Knuppel, 21. Kama Maklu, 14 points, 9 rebounds. There were some nasty blocks in this game. All right, this was one of Duke's best defensive performances of the tournament. People saying Duke haven't actually played a real team yet. You are just so mistaken thinking Arizona and Alabama are not legit teams. That is such disrespect that doesn't even need to be given out there. But Duke, to no one's surprise, in the Final Four, they've been the people's champion since the get-go, and we'll be watching them perform against who else? None other than Houston. Houston getting past Tennessee 69-50, another blowout. I mean, I went to the Final Four all 3 games, you know, the 2 semifinals and the actual final game were all close. These Elite Eight games just haven't been. Tennessee held to only 15 points in the first half. Just embarrassing, embarrassing stuff. Could never get over that 19-point deficit at halftime. They held the Cougars to only 35 points in the second half. They only put up 35. So Tennessee dominated. Chaz Lanier and Jordan Gainey both dropping 17. But LJ Cryer himself on Houston also dropped 17. Emmanuel Sharp with 16. The Houston Cougars advancing to take on Duke. And that's going to be a great basketball game. I almost just get the feeling that you're going to see Duke manhandle Houston. I don't know. Maybe it's just because Duke's been so dominant. It hasn't been a shocker when they win. But Houston, great win over Tennessee. Also had a great win over Purdue. We'll see how they perform against Duke. I'm definitely backing Duke to win the entire March Madness. But we'll see who they play, especially if I think they're getting past Houston. We'll see who they play when they take on the winner of Florida and Auburn. That's right, Auburn getting past Michigan State. Probably the best game compared to the Texas Tech and Florida matchup. You know, Michigan State keeping it close, but yet again, Auburn ahead just the whole way. Just kind of ahead the whole way. There wasn't much for them to do. Wasn't much for them to do. Auburn putting together a fantastic performance. Johnny Broome, 25 points, 14 rebounds. He is such a star. Been with this team since, honestly, I remember him from 2019. I swear I'm not making this up. I swear I remember these teams, but Jade Atkins, 15 points. Chase Richardson, 11. And Jackson Kohler with 17. Michigan State did all they could, but you just can't get past Auburn, man. And that's right, guys. All one seeds in the Final Four. I think this is the first time in like over a decade, 15 years or something. It's the first time in a long time all one seeds have been, and they've been dominant. They've truly been dominant. I'm hoping when they match up, it's much more close, because it's not fun in March Madness to watch blowouts. It's not fun to watch any of the top seeds win. So it's pretty ironic that every single one seed is in here. I'll say the biggest upset you're going to see is an Auburn-Houston championship game. No one would have that, but if Florida makes it, if Duke makes it, if Florida or Duke wins, those are your favorites. But I mean, these are the top four favorites to win March Madness. They're the four in it. This is almost like a realistic March Madness. You know, when you play like a video game or you do like some online simulation and it's like you're doing all these crazy upsets, you're doing stuff with your buddies like outside basketball, like, oh, the eighth seed winning. None of that this year, okay? You're just getting one seeds all the way, and you're going to be seeing a lot of stars. You know, John Broomey, he's going to be an absolute dog. LJ Cryer, Walton Clayton Jr., of course, Cooper Flagg. You're going to see a lot of studs and a lot of future NBA players in the Final Four. So we'll be heading to San Antonio next weekend and on Monday to see who wins March Madness. I'm thinking Duke, but anything can happen. With that, ladies and gentlemen, not too much to talk about on today's episode. We'll get right into UFC Mexico City, because it was an interesting card. It was really an interesting card, and like I mentioned, 10-2 overall on the card. We go a perfect 6-0 on the prelims. You had some fun finishes, you had some fun performances, some dull decisions. Let's check it all out. Kicking off the card, lightweight action, Marquel Medeiros versus Austin Hubbard. And we thought Marquel Medeiros would win, and he did. Now, some people are thinking this was a robbery, that Austin Hubbard should have gotten the decision. But when you go three rounds, and it's boring, and nothing really happens, they're going to lean towards, you know, the guy who's more on the come up. And Marquel Medeiros, far more on the come up. He's now on an 8-fight winning streak. He was the favorite. He gets the win. Now, look at stats for the fight. 44 significant strikes to 26, favor of Marquel Medeiros. 62 total strikes, 57, favor of Austin Hubbard. Austin Hubbard goes 2 of 9 on takedowns for 7.5 minutes of control time, and Marquel Medeiros goes 0 of 1. He does get 1.5 minutes of control time. Medeiros outstruck him by 6 in round 1. Round 1 was pretty clear for Medeiros. Round 2, it was also close. 1 of 2 on takedowns, 4 minutes and 12 seconds control time for Hubbard. That was pretty much a Hubbard round. And then round 3, you know, it's 2.5 minutes goes to Austin Hubbard. The other goes to Medeiros. It's 50-50. They lean on Marquel Medeiros. So Marquel, 2-0 now in the UFC. Also went on day one's Contender Series. We'll see what's next for him at lightweight. I always love to matchmake on the same cards. And honestly, we're going to talk about some guy in the co-main event who lost. There's a fun fight you could do. But I think Medeiros really needs a pick-me-up fight to some regard. We just had Alexander Hernandez beat Kurt Holubo last weekend. I think Alexander Hernandez would be a great opponent. Other than that, you know, he'll stay in the UFC, but this was just a pretty run-of-the-mill performance. As for Austin Hubbard, I mean, this is just not shocking to me. 2-fight losing streak, you know, he's 1-4 in his last 5 UFC fights. He's just never really been, he's been good enough to perform and keep up, but he's never been good enough to stand out. So, Hubbard, I think you should go elsewhere. You know, you got the GFL, you got the PFL, you got one championship. There's definitely places he can go and find success, but in the UFC, I just don't see that. So Austin Hubbard, I'm going to say, is going to get cut. And even if they do keep him, it's going to be fighting someone off of the Contender Series. But hey, could be worse places you could be. Following that, we had a fantastic finish in this one. And Jamal Emmers over Gabriel Miranda. We called him getting a knockout, but I mean, this could be a runner for KO of the year. Jamal Emmers putting Gabriel Miranda lights out. Putting Gabriel Miranda's lights out, if you want to get grammatically correct. Jamal Emmers, 9th career knockout, 12th career finish. Love to see it. First win since 2023. And I mean, Gabriel Miranda started this one pretty quick. Pretty quick, landing 2 takedowns, going for a submission attempt. Jamal's able to get back to his feet, and once the hands started going, he started clipping him, and that was that. Hit him in the head, he got knocked down. Miranda getting back up, trying to dodge, puts up his guard, trying to, you know, get a little defensive guard going. Jamal Emmers goes right through. Miranda face plants out like a light. Love to see it. Gabriel Miranda, probably going to get cut. probably going to get kicked. 1-3 in the UFC, and he's been knocked out in every one of those. Now, mind you, they've all been entertaining knockouts, but yeah, not going to cut it. Absolutely not. Gabriel Miranda, bye-bye to you. You could even do Gabriel Miranda versus Austin Hubbard. How about that? I'm feeling generous. Gabriel Miranda versus Austin Hubbard. One of them moves up or one of them moves down. For Jamal, I mean, featherweight division. Hello, Jamal Emmers. Love to see him win. He's 35, so kind of past his prime, but he was the minus 220 favorite for a reason. Getting the finish here just makes me so happy for Jamal. Just always been a fan of him ever since he upset Khusin Ashgabab. It's been interesting to watch him win. I always like to matchmake people on the same card as I brought up, so we got someone else who won at featherweight. He might be moving up a bit more, but we might move them together. So Jamal Emmers, options for him. Lots of guys at featherweight. That'll be down to fight him. How about the loser of Dre Anderson Brito and Pat Sabatini next weekend? No, no. Fun options for him. You can do Andre Feely. You can even do Cub Sonson's retired, isn't he? Other options. We'll have to see. Following that, another close decision. People saying there was a robbery as Hafa Garcia took on Vink Pichel. And first off, Vink Pichel, I thought he lost this. You know, Hafa was the minus 45 favorite. But Vink is 42 going the distance with a 30-year-old and looking pretty dang good doing it. Totals from the fight, 79 significant strikes to 64 in favor of Vink, 88 total strikes to 76 in favor of Vink, 2 of 6 on takedowns for Hafa for 2 minutes and 15 seconds control time. I mean, this is, we're going to talk about this in the main event in terms of you can land more significant strikes on someone and it doesn't correlate to you actually winning the fight. That's kind of what happened here. Vink kind of out-edged him in every round except round 2. That was where he kind of had a bit more than Hafa, but Hafa was outstruck every round, yet still looked like he was doing more damage with every hit. They give it to Hafa Garcia, not too surprised. That's just how it's going to go. Hafa is now 3-1 in his last 4, only losses to Grant Dawson, so not too bad. As for Vink, I mean, I doubt he's going to retire. This is now 3 straight losses, 42. I don't really know what to do with him. Going to be honest, you could do Hafa Garcia versus Drew Dober. We'll mention him later. You could do Hafa Garcia versus Marco Medeiros. You could do Vink Pichel versus Austin Hubbard if you want one of them to stay and one of them to go. But, you know, kind of just two boring decisions right there. And Vink was online saying, hey, someone call the police. I just got robbed. And the verdict scorecard did have Hafa Garcia winning rounds 1 and 3 pretty handsomely, and even round 2 was a bit closer. So Hafa Garcia gets the decision nod. I'm not complaining because I picked him. After that, we had Lupi Godinez back in action, taking on Julia Pollastri, and to no one's surprise, Lupi Godinez wins. I mean, she was ranked number 11 for a reason, and she gets the win. And this one, 84 significant strikes to 87. Julia Pollastri actually edged her out there. Total strikes, 117, 114. Julia Pollastri had more, but 5-11 on takedowns, 7.5 minutes of control time. 50% of the fight goes to Lupi on the ground. 50% goes to Julia on the feet. They gave it to Lupi Godinez. And by the way, round 3, 58 significant strikes landed by both of these women. I mean, you go 14 for 11 in favor of Julia Pollastri. Both land 15 significant strikes round 2. And then round 3, these women just decide to go at it, just balls to the wall. I mean, I guess not actually balls to the wall, but just fighting off their butts. And Lupi Godinez pulling off the win, snapping a little 2-fight losing streak. Great to see. As for Julia Pollastri, you know, this is win-loss since joining the UFC. Yeah, it is what it is. They'll bring her back for something. There's always some random woman strawweight you can fight, but Lupi Godinez, back in the win column. I would love to see her move up the rankings. I don't know against who. I don't really know. Yasmin Lucindo, Marina Rodriguez, Amanda Ribas. There's a couple options for her. But I do think Lupi Godinez is good enough to be fighting upwards in the rankings as opposed to taking short notice fights against the likes of Julia Pollastri. So didn't get the finish. Really hope she would have, but Lupi Godinez, she'll take it. 5 takedowns, not too bad. Second last prelim of the night as we had Melquizel Costa taking on Christian Rodriguez. And I knew that Melquizel Costa would win because Christian Rodriguez cannot beat anyone unless they're a young prospect. This is just no knowledge in the MMA community that Christian Rodriguez cannot beat anyone that is not undefeated. Okay, so Melquizel Costa doing what he had to do in this one. 6 of 15 on takedowns for Christian Rodriguez. 1 of 2 for Melquizel Costa. Just under 7 minutes of control time for Christian. Just under 5 for Melquizel. 65 significant strikes to 64 in favor of Melquizel Costa. 159 total strikes to 77. favor Mikel Costa. That's what really made the difference. Costa takes round one. Costa takes round two. Christian might have won round three. It was whatever, okay? Another split decision. Or actually, it was unanimous for Mikel. I didn't even realize that. But Costa, already 2-0 in 2025. Great stuff for him. Three-fight winning streak. I mean, honestly, not too shabby. Can't even lie. For Christian, win-loss. Honestly, he can only win against guys that are... He kills prospects and then can't advance his career at all, which is just pretty comical. But Costa was the plus 150 underdog. He cashes. Good stuff for him. Really was hoping he'd get a finish. Honestly, thought he would, but ain't too bad. In terms of featherweight, where do you go from here? You know, like I said, Jamal Emmers won. Him versus Costa could be an option. You could then do Christian Rodriguez versus some up-and-comer. That's really just what I think they should do with him. Have him fight up-and-comers, because if you can get past Christian Rodriguez, you're good enough to fight better competition. And if you can't, well, you're just kind of doomed. That's kind of how it's worked. So, good stuff for Costa. Kind of a boring decision, but it's what it is. With that, final prelim of the evening as Ateba Gaudier made his debut. I was a little nervous with him. You know, he's coming in 6-1, taking on Jose Daniel Medina, but he made Jose Daniel Medina look like a bum. 3 minutes, 32 seconds, he knocks him out cold. I mean, Ateba, dominance, 6 straight wins, 6 knockouts. I mean, dude's an absolute killer. Coming from Cameroon, he's the next Francis Ngannou. And I mean, there's this comical moment where he had Jose absolutely wobbled against the cage. Jose does like the brigadade, puts both his hands in the air, kind of like tells him to bring it on. He absolutely wobbles him in the face. Then he goes, you know, to kind of like dip his head, catches a knee from Ateba, and Ateba doesn't even need a follow-up punch. Ref calls it off right there. Ateba Gaudiar, welcome to the men's middleweight division. He gets our first 50K performance bonus of the night. No fight of the night. Another fight night with no fight of the night. Kind of a doozy, but Ateba getting the 50K performance bonus. Love to see it. Really love to see it. He's good on the contender series. Even better in his debut. I'm excited to see who they match him up with next. There's a lot of middleweights you could have him fight. You know, one that always comes to mind for me is Edmund Shabazian. You could even do... where's some other middleweights that he could fight? You know, the Michelle Pereira fight could be fun. I mean, Ateba's 22, so he's young. They're going to build him up. But coming in, knocking out a guy, 33, 11 years your senior. I mean, Ateba Gaudiar, I'm liking where he's going to go. We'll see how he does against someone who's actually kind of talented, not to knock. Josef Daniel Medina, who I should note is 0-3 in the UFC, so he's going to get cut. He's also been brutally beaten in the last two fights. So we'll see what happens, but Ateba Gaudiar, great performance. Loved to see it. And also terms of getting fraud checked. This wasn't even really a fraud check. You know, MMA fans like to throw that term around. But Kevin Borjas beating Ronaldo Rodriguez. Just kind of a doozy for the flyweight division. No, Ronaldo Rodriguez has 2 million Instagram followers. He has such a following. He has such a personality. He's so good on the mic at press conferences. It just doesn't translate into the octagon. And it was pretty evident here as Kevin Borjas just had his number. He gets a sympathy round three on one judge's scorecard. But other than that, this was Kevin Borjas all day. Ronaldo landed a takedown in round one. It was pretty easy for Kevin to get up from. He then dropped Ronaldo, which didn't really hurt him too much, but lost him the round. Kevin then just barely counter outstrikes him in round two. Round three, both of them pick up the pace, but Kevin was just a tad ahead, you know. 83 significant strikes to 64 is the total. 84 total strikes to 64. Ronaldo goes 1-5 on takedowns, only gets a 57 seconds control time. I mean, Ronaldo, very tough loss, snaps his 7-fight winning streak. He'll be 2-1 in the UFC, and it's just evident he's not ready for these ranked opponents. He's just not. So we'll see what he can do. But as for Kevin, I mean, not too bad. This snaps a 2-fight losing streak. This brings him back into the conversation of, can he get a ranked opponent? I don't really know, guys. I don't really know. I'd like to matchmake these guys with people on the card. So I do have someone in mind who Kevin could take on next. But as for Ronaldo, it's kind of back to the drawing board. You know, maybe Ronaldo versus a Charles Johnson could be a fun matchup of some regard. But I don't really know. Who did Joshua Van beat last? That could actually be Rey Tesoura versus Ronaldo Rodriguez. I think that could be a fun one. Both guys only have a couple losses. That could be a good matchup right there. Moving on more into our main card, we get another 50K performance bonus as David Martinez gives us another great knockout of Simon Oliveira. S-A-I-M-O-N. I found it was actually pronounced Simon. I've been calling him Salmon this entire time, which I actually think is hilarious. But David Martinez, the black spot. Barton, -400, getting it done. How about 8 straight wins for him, and he gets his 10th career knockout of 12 wins. Dude's a beauty. Dude's a beauty. Welcome to the UFC, David Martinez. I'm excited to see where you go in terms of the men's. Where is he at? Bantamweight division? I think he's in bantamweight, yeah. But in terms of this one, just, you know, they're going at it in round one, and David just has more power. David looks more composed. Eventually, he's able to land a 1-2 on Salmon and drops him. Lands a couple follow-up punches, puts his lights out cold. His head's bouncing off the canvas. Ref's like, yeah, that's enough. No more. Bye-bye. Simon, actually, you know what? He is Salmon. He's Chop Salmon. 3 straight losses over a course of 5 years, I think it is. Yeah, Simon's ready to go. As for David, he's staying. He's staying. David Martinez looking phenomenal. Just the composure, just the technicalness, the 1-2. And we actually saw another beautiful 1-2 in the co-main event. I mean, it was all around great work for David Martinez, keeping the win streak alive. I'm excited to see what's next for this kid. For Salmon, bye-bye. But for David, I don't know. Rankings are just, you know, somewhere where I don't really want to throw him right away. He's 26, from Mexico. We really want to keep him out of losing so we can build up another Mexican star. Try to think of someone who comes to mind. I think Fareed Bashrat or Javed Bashrat, one of the Bashrat twins, probably, I think it's Javed, is in need of a win. I think that could be a competitive contest you could do with those two. Other than that, bantamweight's such a deep division, you'll always find people there. In terms of other finding people, next matchup, our final bantamweight matchup of the night, Raul Rosas Jr., Vince Morales. And I feel like I'm seeing a similar fight from Raul Rosas Jr. Now, mind you, he's 20. He's 20 years old, okay? I just want to cut Raul Rosas Jr. some slack here. He's 20 years old, but he just has a tendency to fade in contests, and that's what kind of happened here. Now, mind you, he got through so much adversity here. Raul Rosas Jr. is learning. He's getting better. He's not ready for the rankings. I know people are saying he should go to the rankings. He should not. Now, mind you, this is 4 straight wins. He's 5-1 in the UFC at 21 years old. 20 years old. At 20 years old. 11-1 professional record. He's a stud. Last 2 decisions, though, they've just been very, kind of just showing that there are levels to this. So, did want to say, round 1, domination, 11 significant strikes to 0, 15 total strikes to 8. Both men landed takedown, 3.5 minutes of control time, though, go to Raul, 36 seconds go to Vince. It was going to be a 10-8, turned into a 10-9 for Raul Rosas Jr. Round 2 comes around, Raul outstruck 11-5 significantly, but does land 2 takedowns, 3.5 minutes of control time. Vince doesn't do anything. It's then a 20-18 contest. 2 rounds to 0. We go to round 3. Vince throws up 2 absolutely tight. They were locked in. Anaconda chokes, Darce chokes, if you want to call him that. And that's some miracle. Raul just doesn't tap. Manages to escape. Manages to land his own takedown, get 2.5 minutes control time. He lost round 3. But still managed to survive until the bell and did what he had to do to win. Totals from the fight, 4 of 9 on takedowns for Raul for 9 minutes, 38 seconds of control time. Vince only lands 17 significant strikes, lands 1 takedown, 2 minutes of control time. It's not enough. Vince, this is going to be his 5th straight loss in the UFC. He's getting cut. Okay, bye-bye, Vince. Hate to see you go. Not really. You haven't done much. 34 years old. For Raul, he's got momentum. It's just, he's not ready. I think a name I saw thrown out there was Brady Highstand. He was runner-up on Dana White's Contender Series. He actually might have won the Ultimate Fighter, I meant to say. Ricky Tercios, he already beat, but that's someone who Brady Highstand had a fight the night with. I think that's a great option. I think MMA Theory on Instagram might have thrown that out, but Raul just needs to keep building up the wins, because you put Raul against anyone in the rankings. I mean, Montel Jackson will knock him out. Amin Zahabi will knock him out. Marcus McGee will probably submit him. He's not ready for a ranked opponent. The top 15 at bantamweight are tough to break into. You have to be really freaking good. It's not that I don't think Raul is there yet. I just think he's going to be really needing to learn how to strike, because he had Vince wobbled at the start of round 1 and elected to take him down. Couldn't submit him in round 1. Couldn't submit him in round 2. Had multiple back control times, then almost gets submitted twice in round 3. And if Vince Morales was a Charles Oliveira with that choke locked in, it'd be lights out. So Raul, he's learning, he's getting better, he just still has somewhat of a way to go. But great win for him here. I would love to see him fight a younger up-and-comer as well in this next contest. Third to last fight of the evening gave us our third of 4 performance bonuses as Edgar Cherez runs through CJ Vergara in 2.5 minutes. I mean, 2.5 minutes on the dot. This was domination. This was domination hands-on in terms of Edgar Cherez. Thought he landed a knockdown on CJ Vergara. Turns out he didn't. Turns out he did, but he had CJ rutted, CJ tripped, CJ got clipped. Only 8 significant strikes landed for him. 8 strikes that landed clean on CJ Vergara's jaw. I mean, you'd have thought he got knocked down twice or 3 times the way he was running backwards. Edgar, you know, is able to get on top of his back after he slips, lock in a rear naked choke, and that was that. Edgar Cherez, domination, 12 wins, 12 finishes, back in the win column. And by the way, we've already mentioned his losses, but Clayton Carpenter on Davis Katara series, Tatsuro Taira on his UFC debut, and Joshua Van at the Sphere, none of those guys were able to finish them. Okay, so Edgar Cherez, he's an absolute dog. And the rankings are definitely in his future. I can definitely see that for him, but I just don't know if that's what we should do yet. You know, he's 29. He still has some issues. So I think him versus Kevin Borjas would be a great matchup. Both of them picked up big wins on this card. It would be a great opportunity for both of them to then, whoever wins that, move into the rankings, since they're both coming off of really good wins in this one. As for CJ Vergara, just the tale of a lot of guys who have to lose to put over other people. Because CJ Vergara, 3 straight losses now. He's gone 3-5 in the UFC. Has never amounted to anything. It's time for him to explore other pastures, one could say. So, CJ, 33. Time to go. 4 of his 7 losses now he's been finished in. And this is the 3rd time he's been submitted. So, bye-bye, CJ Vergara. As for Edgar Cherez, welcome, welcome, welcome. You are good to stay, mi amigo. What we were supposed to have next would have been Joe Pyfer versus Kelvin Gastelum. Unfortunately, Joe Pyfer got sick. I think they're trying to rebook that for April, maybe May, but tough loss there. Losing Joe Pyfer versus Kelvin Gastelum was a huge loss for this card. And did it really hurt? I don't know. I think the main event was inevitable no matter what way you spun it, but certainly losing Kelvin versus Joe wasn't now. The co-main event we did get, though, Manuel Torres versus Drew Dober. Short-lived, minute 45, but Manuel Torres, domination. I'm impressed, man. I thought Drew Dober was going to beat Manuel. I kind of wrote Manuel off after Ignacio ran through him, but I think that speaks more to how good Ignacio is compared to if Manuel Torres is bad or not, because landed a quick 1-2, dropped Drew Dober. Drew Dober is hanging on to Manuel Torres' foot. Torres is bashing his head in, I mean, so, so bad. Mike Beltran sees enough, stops the fight. Drew Dober, right after, you know, Mike Beltran separates him, gets up, is moving towards him, ready to still punch, and everyone's telling him, like, Drew, you're done. Okay, the fight's not over. He couldn't even comprehend it. So clearly concussed in the octagon, which you never love to see, especially for someone like Drew Dober, 36. He's been in over 40 professional fights. Definitely suffered a concussion in this one. Manuel Torres, another finish here. Beautiful to see, getting his 15th of 16 career wins by finish. His 8th by knockout. Beautiful stuff for Manuel Torres. And let's not act like this guy isn't 4-1 in the UFC. All of those wins coming in the first round, all of them 50K performance bonuses. He's legit. He's super legit, and if I'm not mistaken, we have a fight coming up between Benoit St. Denis and, Joel Alvarez. I would love the loser of that to take on Manuel Torres. I really would. I really think that would be a fantastic matchup between those two. Book it if you're me, because Manuel Torres is super good. I feel bad I wrote him off. This was a 50-50 pick for me. I wrote with Drew Dober, because mind you, to go 10-2 on picks, you kind of have to go against your gut at times. And, you know, as I looked through this card, there were some matchups where, I mean, Austin Hubbard and McCord Demaldarios, 50-50. Rodriguez Costa, 50-50. You had, I mean, basically, Dave Martinez, Samuel Alvaro was 50-50. Even the main event was 50-50. So we miss on some 50-50s, but as for this one, we nailed it. Oh, no, we didn't nail it for this one, now that I'm actually thinking about what I was just saying. But Drew Dober, what should be next for him? I mean, you have Jim Miller versus Chase Hooper. The loser of that, or even the winner of that versus Drew Dober, would be super fun. If we're thinking of the same card, you can do Hoffa Garcia versus Drew Dober. You can do Marquel Medeiros versus Drew Dober. There's things you can do with him. But, you know, it's just, this was his 8th career loss being finished, and this was the 5th time that he's been knocked out. So certainly done. They've taken its toll. Taken its toll on the skull of Drew Dober. But hey, he's done it for our entertainment. I must give him my thanks. With that, we got into the main event of the evening, ladies and gentlemen. Brandon Moreno versus Steve Ercik, and it was sadly what I expected. It sadly was, I can't lie. Just five straight rounds, Moreno winning every single round. I think they gave round three to Steve Ercik, but similar style to Brandon Royval. You know, we're looking at the stats, 116 significant strikes to 89. You know, Ercik landed more, but none with power. None with intensity. Moreno landed one takedown round five, pretty much just to say he could do it. Pretty much just picked him up and set him down just to say he could do it. But just domination. Domination from Brandon Moreno. Just, you know, Moreno was throwing shots with the intent to finish. All right, didn't lean on the grappling enough. 1-for-5 on takedowns. I thought if he could have gotten it to the ground, he could have gotten a finish. But I think that speaks to the takedown defense of Steve Ercik. It's just Ercik threw nothing. He landed over 100 significant strikes across five rounds. Nothing with intent to kill. He was throwing intent to kill against Pantoja. It just wasn't doing it here. So tough to see. Really tough to see. Brandon Moreno gets another main event win, but back-to-back dull five-round main event wins. Awkward, really. Brandon Moreno's 31. Two straight wins. Two fight main event wins, I should say. I was going to say fight night, but not fight of the night. Not really. But those wins are over the number 3, Amir Albazi, and the number 8, Steve Ercik. So he's clearly entitled to a title shot. You also have Brandon Royval, who's above him. He's on a 2-fight main event win streak as well. He also is entitled to a title shot. But they both dropped 2 fights to the champion. Okay, there's more excitement from a Kai Kara France title shot at 4 and a Manel Cape title shot at 6 compared to these two. So what do you do really here? You know, there's a couple options. There's a couple options to settle who should get the next title shot. First, let me actually just talk about Steve Ercik real quick. Steve Ercik now holds 3 straight losses. Those losses are to the last 2 flyweight champions and the presumable number 1 contender in Kai Kara France. So Steve Ercik, he's not done. Don't write him off. He just needs to fight a Joshua Van, a Ramazan Temeryov, a Kaya Sakura. I think the Kaya Sakura fight would be super fun. He needs to fight someone who's not a world beater. Okay, so Steve Ercik, rest up. Don't come back so soon. And please take a fight against lower level competition. Don't keep fighting the best of the best. But in terms of what do we do here? Because Brandon Moreno is going to remain ranked at number 2. The guy above him holds a title shot. Also, it's seemingly the guy at number 4 holds a title shot over him. So what do we do? You got Manel Cape. You got Kai Kara France. You got Brandon Moreno. Brandon Royval. Those 4 somehow need to be worked into a fight. Somehow. So you're either going to just give Kai Kara France a title shot. Run Manel Cape versus Brandon Moreno. Manel Cape versus Brandon Royval. Brandon Moreno waits in the rings. Or you do Manel Cape versus Kai Kara France. You do Brandon Royval versus Brandon Moreno 3, the rematch. There's a lot of options. I just think there's multiple divisions where you have multiple number one contenders. Flyweight now technically has 4, in my opinion. So it's going to get a bit crowded at the top. But good win for Moreno. 2-fight winning streak. And I wrote him off after that loss to Brandon Royval. And he's done nothing but impress me since then. So we'll see what happens, but honestly, as I think about it, you know, bantamweight doesn't have a clear number one contender. We actually do have 1 at featherweight, 0 at lightweight, welterweight and middleweight both have multiple that are entitled. Light heavyweight has multiple that are entitled. Heavyweight has 1, strawweight has 0, flyweight has multiple, and women's bantamweight has 1. So you have a lot of divisions with multiple top contenders. This is the part of the year we have to decipher who's going to be taking on who. But UFC Mexico, if I were to rank it, because I'm kind of trying to keep track of my rankings instead of having to go through every single thing at the end of the year. But in terms of fight night event, this is probably the 5th out of the 8 we've had. I would say you've actually had 2 Apex cards that were better than this. In terms of the main event, this is the 2nd worst of the year. I'm saying this was a tad more entertaining because there was a crowd compared to Vittori and Dolidze, but yet again, 5 rounds, no knockouts, no dropping, no nothing, no submission attempts, just distance striking. That's not going to cut it, in my opinion. You really need excitement. You really need to draw people in. Okay, you really got to do that. So I think for the future, you know, Brandon Moreno versus someone like Kai Kara France, if they rematch, or Manel Cape, I think they'll go much more at it as opposed to other options. However, I still am pretty cautious. But that's all we got for UFC Mexico. We look ahead to UFC Vegas 105. Another Apex card, but nonetheless, some decent fights on here. You got Josh Emmett, Lerone Murphy, Pat Sabatini, Joe Anderson Brito, Kenny and Chukwu. already back for his third fight at heavyweight, taking on Martin Boudet. Two veterans in Brad Tavares and Gerald Meerschaert. Torres Fitty makes his UFC debut. Little worried for him being that he's undefeated. Get Davy Grant back in action. You get Victor Henry. You get Rhys McKee. You get a bunch of names you may recognize. But pretty run-of-the-mill Apex card. Emmett versus Murphy's going to be interesting. Okay, I'll be dropping my thoughts on that later in the week, but I don't know who to pick for that because Murphy's undefeated. We've been getting fraud checks the entire year. I don't know what's going to go on, but rest of the year looks pretty good. UFC 314, Volkanovski versus Lopez, perfect. Apparently, UFC Kansas needs a new main event. Jamal Hill's out against Khalil Rodriguez Jr. I don't know what you do there. UFC Des Moines, Corey Sandhagen, Devson Figueiredo, banger. UFC 315, I forgot Blumwell would take out Jack Del Valle. I completely forgot about that. May 17th, you're back at the Apex. May 31st, they actually announced Aaron Blanchfield and Macy Barber. We mentioned that last week. That's going to be a banger. UFC 316 and June 7th at the Prudential Center. More events. I think they're going to Atlanta in June. They're going to Baku. Where's Baku? Oh my gosh, what is Baku? Where are we going? Oh, Azerbaijan. They're going to Azerbaijan. Wow, I'm trying to forget that they're going all over the place here. And of course, actually, the final thing that I'll announce is that UFC 320, September 13th, they're doing another UFC Noche in Guadalajara, Mexico. So they're going to be saving all their big Mexican fighters for that card. We'll see how that goes. Maybe Diego Lopez is there. That would be pretty awesome. But guys, that's all we got for today's episode. Pretty around the mill. Just a little March Madness. Just a little UFC. A lot of fun stuff to come, though. Going to be a busy week. That's why I wanted to record this on a Sunday. And thankfully, all the March Madness games ended early. But we'll be back later in the week. More March Madness talk. More UFC talk. We'll have so much more. Guys, make this the best week of your lives. Kick some butt. And also, make sure to say your prayers. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.